Good morning. This is Tom Merritt, host of Daily Tech News Show, Cord Killers and Current Geek, and author of Pilot X, now available at TomMerrittBooks.com. And you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Too Much Scrolling for January 22nd, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, it is the middle of winter and we had snow, so you have citrus.
Of course I do. Of course I do.
It's citrus season, it's, right?
Well, it is. It is. Because it is. When you stop by Whole Foods or some of the grocery stores, I found out Aldi has these. I didn't know that. I haven't seen them there. But anyway, Sumo Citrus comes out.
Sumo Citrus.
That's right. This is a orange, or I shouldn't say orange, a citrus that was developed using a Japanese, like a mandarin or something. They crossbred it to make these citrus.
Giant mandarins.
These are, they're incredibly good. In fact, I think this is an offshoot of Honeycrisp apples.
Okay.
So, you know how Honeycrisp apples have just taken over the apple kingdom.
Yes, they have.
Because they actually taste great.
Right.
And the other apples, well, certainly have flavor. Honeycrisp are just incredibly good.
Mm-hmm.
And they were developed at University of Minnesota. Now, I don't know if you also had, you like grapefruit.
I do. I eat a lot of grapefruit this time of year. Christmas and grapefruit go together for me. I spent every Christmas in Sarasota, Florida growing up. So citrus and Christmas go together for me.
All right. So the Ruby Reds were developed at Texas A&M. And they're, you know, when we were kids, they were like really, really sour. And now they've got this beautiful flavor.
I agree.
And that's just because they basically took different, and they crossbred them.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the Sumo Citrus is incredibly good. In fact, let's go ahead and open one up.
All right.
And you will find out why these things sell for $3.99 a pound.
Oh my goodness. This is going to make a different sound than when we open beers at this time, right?
Yes, it is. Now, what you'll notice is they have like this little nipple on them.
Uh-huh.
And they are incredibly easy to peel, aren't they?
Yeah. Like the cuties?
Yes, they are. But this is different. This is kind of
a giant cutie.
Oh my, nah.
That's the name of my third album.
Well, Halos and Cuties taste great, the Sumo Citrus is its own flavor, my friend. It is like the best citrus
out there. I've never had one of these. I've seen on our Facebook page where you have made mention of these. And so here we go. Here's some citrus for you.
Every year, they're a little different.
Yeah.
But they've limited the supply of them. They only come in during this month.
Yeah.
So maybe a month and a half, 2 months. They are expensive. They're limiting the number of trees or the amount that will be there. So it'll never come, like Honeycrisp, there's just sort of taken over the world. You can get a Honeycrisp anytime.
Mm-hmm.
These we won't be able to.
This is good. I'm enjoying this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good radio, what we're eating. Fruit.
So head over, and if you can't find them, just look for the $3.99 a pound ones. Three of them are almost $9.
Wow.
They're like almost $3 each.
Mm-hmm.
So these are treats. So for the kids out there who do not know this, $3 for like a citrus is expensive.
Yeah.
But you know what? If it's really, really good.
Which it is.
You know, it's worth it.
Well, yeah.
They're good for treats.
Yeah.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And, you know, I'm going to cheat a little bit here, and I'm going to go with a TV show, because the premiere...
It isn't a TV show, Steve. It's a streaming show.
The premiere of Star Trek Discovery Season 2 happened this week, and I did tune in to my streaming CBS All Access through Amazon, and I did watch this episode of Star Trek.
So do you pay for CBS All Access?
I do. It's $5.99 a month, and it's mostly for my wife. She really enjoys those CBS shows. All of those dramas, the Madam Secretaries of the world, those sorts of hour-long dramas that CBS is known for, those are the shows that she is paying for CBS every month. I'm in for Star Trek, man.
Okay. So tell us about the first episode. This is the second season, by the way, the second attempt.
Right. This is season two.
The first season wasn't really accepted real well. I mean, it wasn't received real well.
I did not like season one of Star Trek Discovery. I thought that it was just too dark, too much of a not Star Trek-y kind of story being told. They're very... The bridge of the Enterprise should be a very well-lit, exciting adventure into space. And I feel like the first season of Discovery was about things that Star Trek isn't normally about.
Okay.
There's too much war in season one of Discovery.
Okay.
I think Discovery should be about discovering new worlds, new races, and how we can all get along. It should be
about boldly going where we never gone before.
That's right. Star Trek, when Gene Roddenberry was writing it, he mm-hmm. was writing about us. He was writing about racism in America and how we can live together in harmony.
They had a Russian.
They had an African American. They had all of these people working together. A Scottish guy, and they all worked together.
He's working it all he can, Steve.
And Discovery should be that continuation of that analogous story where you and I see this alien race and this alien race are treated as equals. We didn't get a lot of that in the first season. It was about war. The Klingons were the bad guys, and we're going to fight, and we're going to have a war together.
Okay.
And then...
Against each other. And basically, when you have a war against each other, it is about dehumanizing, or I don't know how you would say it in a... decreaturizing? Whatever you want to say.
And the second season so far, we've only gotten one episode, so far it seems to be more on track with what I'm expecting from Star Trek.
In fact, something I just thought about, we all have human rights, and so we're all equal because, I mean, according to the United States, we are all equal before the law.
Mm-hmm.
What is very interesting about when you start dealing with something like Star Trek is you have the Klingons and you have the other races. And they have, we'd have to find a different word for human rights, but they have the rights of a sentient being,
mm-hmm.
Which is very interesting.
There's some issues that come up in Star Trek.
Sure, and you could see how it kind of play out. You know, if we somehow figured out that we could communicate with dolphins, like we communicate with humans, you know, with dolphins in at that point having those types of rights. Anyway, that's where... Steve, we're getting into the philosophy
of
life.
That's where the philosophy of Star Trek really kicks in this particular episode, season two of Star Trek Discovery.
See, there you go. I haven't even seen it, Steve. I'm already there.
It's much more philosophical than season one ever was. Yes, they are going back to the well, and they're resurrecting Captain Pike as the captain of the ship, and that works okay here.
Spock hasn't been there yet, Steve.
Not yet, but he's been talked about over and over and over again, and he's going to make his appearance next episode, probably. And there's going to be... Because this takes
Steve,
place...
he's going to use the Force like no one else has used the Force.
That's a different thing. This one...
Princess Leia is going to show up. It's going to be Carrie Fisher.
Judge me by my size, do you? This particular Star Trek takes place 10 years before Kirk and Spock Star Trek.
Okay.
So that is a very short amount of time.
It is.
Yeah. So we do have these characters of Captain Pike, who was the captain of the Enterprise before Kirk, and Spock is his first officer. So we're going to see a lot more humanity in this Star Trek season, I hope, compared to what we had in the first season. First episode is full of adventure. It's full of philosophy. It's full of all of those things that I go to science fiction for, that mirror of our current world and what we aspire to be in the distant future. This, so far, is a good Star Trek, almost as good as the Orville.
How wonderful is that? Steve, Amazon Prime streaming service giveth and giveth some more. Tell us about what it gaveth you to this year.
We've talked about Deadpool and the rated R superhero fun adventure that Deadpool was for us.
Steve, I reviewed it a year ago. You reviewed it a couple weeks ago.
Well, that's Deadpool 2 now. Remember, okay. That's Deadpool 2.
Okay.
And Deadpool 2 in 2018, they re-released this film still in 2018 under a PG-13 rating.
Right before Christmas.
They called it Once Upon a Deadpool. They took out a little bit of the goriness, a little bit of the swearing, a little bit of the sexuality, and added in this really fun frame story where Deadpool kidnapped Fred Savage and put him into a set that looks just like the bedroom from The Princess Bride.
So this is not, that wasn't just the commercial.
No.
That was a total setup.
This is the absolute, in the middle of Deadpool 2, you're getting these scenes with Deadpool reading the story of Deadpool 2 to Fred Savage. And
he's works. A grown adult, Steve.
There's some really fun interactions there because he is a grown adult who has different ideas than when he was a child actor in The Princess Bride. This works really well on the meta level that Deadpool has always worked on.
This is a Marvel film.
Yes.
But it's Fox Marvel.
There's that's a like saying whole the Beatles. Conversation there.
That's like saying Nickelback is like the Beatles.
Yes.
It's the Beatles.
All I mean, of it's those music, jokes.
But it kind of sucks.
All of those jokes that you saw in the commercials are in this movie. Those weren't just commercials.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's all in there. This is very entertaining, very meta, because Deadpool has always been a character that looked into the camera and talked to the audience.
Well, now, that's what happens when you wear a mask and you can't see your mouth move.
Uh-huh. Now, not only is he talking to the camera in those scenes, but now he's actually in the frame story, telling the story of him talking to the camera in the scenes. It's very deep and very meta. I enjoyed this very much, and I was able to share it with my 12-year-old.
And your 12-year-old enjoying it?
He enjoyed it as well. The jokes that they left in,
yes,
that I was still giggling at but he did not get are still in there.
Okay.
The adult humor is still there, but it's masked just enough so it's reasonable for my superhero loving 12-year-old to watch this superhero movie.
It reminds me of South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut,
mm-hmm,
when they sent sent the movie to be reviewed, to be rated, they would always say, oh, you can't do this in the film, and they would just make it worse.
They would do something way worse. Those guys are really good at drawing their attention, the audience's attention to them and their production.
Okay.
Yeah, this was great. I look forward to, this is maybe a new way of making movies. Music has done this for a long time. They've remixed a song and maybe re-released it in the same year. Movies haven't really done this.
Well, they've done it. They've had the version that is for radio, and then they've had the radio edit.
Uh-huh.
And the version that, well, let's just say it's more grown-up humor.
Uh-huh.
Except that's not grown-up. Let's just say it's more mature humor.
Right. This is something that movies haven't done in a
sure
theatrical release before. I look forward to maybe this being...
Well, I mean, George Lucas did that with the Star Wars, didn't he?
Not in the same year.
I'm just teasing.
Not in the same year. Yes, you're right. Re-releasing a film years later is one thing.
And changing it.
And changing it is one thing.
And why not?
Well, when you have the tools, sometimes you have to use them. That's what the...
Yeah, everyone's just praying that George Lucas can change the last Star Wars film.
Maybe. Get to work on that. This works really well. You got to see The Favorite, which is a movie that we talked about at the very end of 2018. It's one of those really good ones that was released right before Christmas.
It was. This is a grown-up film, Steve. Mm-hmm. Unlike what you just got to see, Steve.
What I choose to see, I suppose.
Oh, I'm just teasing. The Favorite stars Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone.
And Olivia Colman, that's the actress that I would go to see The Favorite, is Olivia Colman. I love her work.
Well, they are one. All three of them are wonderful, mm-hmm, in this film. The film is about a queen and about manipulation of that queen. Emma Stone arrives and immediately starts her work on, well, just changing the views and how everything's looked. Obviously, the queen is being manipulated. There's a war going on. There's taxes going on, Steve. The Trade Federation.
Trade Federation.
Oh my goodness.
Drawn into this.
There's a lot of humor in this, but this is not necessarily a humorous story. It is a story of power and manipulation, and then a story about your place in it. Mm. And I won't kind of give away everything, but what I will say is that I did enjoy this. This should be up for one of the best films of the year if it's not wasn't picked up. I don't think it will win, but I can say that it was very, very good and worthy of your time if you'd like to see it. Let's just say 80 out of 100.
Oh, that's pretty high for your numbers.
Yeah, this is a pretty good film.
All right. So once again, this is a historic story that might not have historic pieces to it. This has the sensitivities of the 21st century.
Yeah, there's a lot of modern views in this film. And I'm not sure if I don't think this was meant to be historically accurate. Let's just say that there's a lot of modern sensibilities going on there, Steve.
But very entertaining.
Very entertaining. And you've got this wonderful cast. You've got a very fun script. And you've got, it's just beautiful costumes and all that other stuff.
And this film came out at about the same time as Mary, Queen of Scots that you saw last week.
Mary, Queen of Scots.
And are they comparable? Do you
see that? Yeah, I would say that they are, they're different films, different types of films. This has got a little more humor to it. That was a different type of manipulation.
Hmm.
And they were kind of kept apart from each other. And they eventually have to have this talk. This one was a different type of manipulation. This was a manipulation of a person who the queen was kind of batty, but obviously just aware enough of what was going on that eventually something happened. So,
Would you suggest one or the other?
No, they're both worthy.
Okay.
Worthy of your time.
All right. You also saw a documentary called Perfect Bid, The Contestant Who Knew Too Much. This one's available right now on Amazon Prime.
On the streaming service. I just flipped it on. I wanted to watch something. This is kind of mindless. It probably shouldn't have been a long documentary.
Okay.
This is a story about a gentleman who watched a lot of Price is Right.
Because he had a lot of sick days?
No, he was just a kid. And we kind of all pick up little things. You watched PBS when you were young. He watched The Price is Right. And so his brother and him, they just basically started putting together a database.
Mm.
And because prizes tend to show up a lot. And he eventually made his way down to CBS for the recording of this show, and he knew all the prices. He was just yelling them out. He didn't get called, but you know, somebody would show up and go, $789, and it was $789. Eventually, wow. Bob Barker kind of picked up on that and just said, well, Theodore, you seem to be helping everybody over here.
Really?
Yes. Eventually, he did make it on stage. And he did not win the showcase because he didn't win enough on the spin to go forward. But he did win his $1,000. And his theory worked. The area where it was much more of a gamble is if it came up to be trips. Trips were much more of a gamble. And because initially of his knowledge, I think they started adding accessories on the automobiles.
Hmm.
So you'd have an automobile up there, and this one's the base model. The next one would have radio and air conditioning. Basically, they start doing it to kind of do some fluctuations.
Do you remember when air conditioning was an add-on?
Oh, good Lord.
And radio. A radio was an add-on.
Well, the FM stereo.
Oh, boy.
You know what?
You're living the high life.
Exactly. Well, anyway, that was called the 70s,
yeah.
Kids. And that's when everything flipped.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, after you're on there, you're not allowed to be on there again. They changed the rules at some point where once you're on, you had to wait 10 years to be on, so he was eligible to be on again. So Bob Barker is interviewed through this, producers interviewed, eventually Drew Carey's interviewed on this. Theodore did make it on to another show and did real well.
Mm-hmm.
But the where he knew too much came in where he was helping another person. He was just yelling out stuff from the crowd. He was at another show. And we got to the final showcase, Steve. And I can't remember what the number was, like $13,389, like some just bizarreness. And that was the exact price. And
Wow. If
you know what the exact price means, it means you win both showcases.
Mm-hmm.
The person that was beat was $400 away.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Oh, so close.
Yeah.
But so far away.
Wow.
Anyway, they took an extra long break because Drew Carey's producers were trying to figure out if there was some cheating going on. And there is no cheating. You're not allowed to bring in your list. You basically have to work from memory. And you can yell whatever you want to out in the audience. Mm-hmm. They're looking for help. So they eventually came on and they awarded the prize to the gentleman. But the reality is the game had changed at that point. And in fact, there's a lot more randomness going on. This is not any different. Was Punch Your Luck? Maybe the Press Your Luck. Press Your Luck. There was
no whammies.
That's right. There was a gentleman who figured out the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always been scandals going on in these.
Game shows have always been rife with scandal, and this is an interesting one. But you said that maybe this was not a great 2-hour documentary. Maybe a 30-minute conversation would have been better.
30 minutes of humor, 30 minutes of kind of the oddity of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a buildup, and I just happened to sit there and watch it like many mindless people do at times.
So it was one of those that you put on while you were doing something else, one of those kind of documentaries.
50 out of 100, certainly not a waste of my time, but not really a good use of it either.
All right. There's some movies that are opening this week. Hopefully they will be good uses of your time. The first one...
I wish I had a Lincoln, Steve.
Rubbing this booger. That's all I think about with that. Let's get to the movie, Chip.
I'm going to tell the story, and everybody's going to laugh, and I'm going to leave and get in my Lincoln.
This first movie is called Serenity, and it features Matthew McConaughey, which is what we're talking about with the Lincoln and rubbing the booger. I love Matthew McConaughey. He is just a stunning use of machismo, just a dude on an adventure, and every adventure I'm like, okay, I am paying attention to that dude in the room.
And this also stars Catwoman, Steve. I don't know if you know that. So it's Matthew McConaughey.
All right. You can't mention Matthew McConaughey without saying that. And Anne Hathaway, stunning.
Oh, is that
Anne
her name?
Hathaway. Yes, that's her name. Stunning in this. And she doesn't really look, she's one of those actors that you can look at her and go, oh, who's that again? Oh, yeah, that's Anne Hathaway. Look at that.
And there's a mystery going on, Steve.
A very deep mystery that we might not even really be touching the top of in the trailer.
This looks really good.
I am intrigued.
If I'm going to a movie, I'm going to see this movie this week.
There's another one opening this week called The King of Thieves. This seems like a theme that we've been having the last few years.
Sure.
A group of older actors are getting these movie roles in these heist kind of films. This is a heist film featuring retired 70-something-year-old actors.
I think so.
Yeah.
In fact, I was really happy to see that Dick Van Dyke, his Cockney accent, really helped Michael Caine put together, you know, his accent for this movie.
This is Michael Caine and Jim Broadbent, two very old, very extensive career, older actors in a fun heist movie. I love a good heist movie. A good heist movie with a lot of great comedy in it. I like the Ocean's 11 sorts of movies. I love those. I look forward to The King of Thieves. There is a movie called The Invisibles that we did talk about earlier.
This was released before Christmas. Right?
This was released in a very narrow range,
a window
before Christmas, so for award season,
sure.
And now it's opening wide this week. This is a very interesting story about Jews in Berlin living amongst the people that are trying to hunt them, to capture them, to put them into camps, and they are secretly a part of their society. This,
how interesting.
It is very interesting.
This looks like a great film, too. I'm sorry I didn't see it, you know, before it was released before Christmas, but this would be a good time to see it, too.
It's interspersed interviews with the actual people
really?
Who did this, and then actors portraying these scenes that they're discussing. So it's not exactly a documentary. It is a narrative, but the real people are there actually giving their story. So there's a documentary element to it, too. I find this intriguing. I want to find this one.
Steve, are there any Harry Potter-like films coming out?
Yes. Harry Potter certainly changed the book world and certainly changed the movie world, and there's lots of books and movies that have come out that look a lot like Harry Potter.
Sure, it certainly has inspired a lot of ancient tales.
Yes, this one is called The Kid Who Would Be King. It is an Arthurian legend. It is a kid that finds a sword in a stone, pulls the sword out of the stone, and then has adventures battling all sorts of things and a magician named Merlin who looks a lot like Professor X.
Yes, he does. But we all know he's John Luke.
That's right. Sir Patrick Stewart as Merlin, as a really wacky looking Merlin, who also changes shape into a younger man who is doing a very good Patrick Stewart impression. I look forward to this one.
Salt and pepper!
I will watch this movie. This is probably not a movie that you'll watch.
That was from the John Mulaney. Special on Netflix. The question was, do you have any weird stories about actors? And he said, they're all weird. Uh-huh. I think that's what he said. He was implying that they are. And that was when Patrick Stewart was the host. That's how he introduced salt and pepper.
Yeah, he was surprised.
Like, salt's here, but, oh my goodness, pepper!
John Mulaney, if you haven't watched John Mulaney's special, you should go back and watch that one. Another thing you should go back and watch is Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The Arthurian legend has been told enough times. Monty Python and the Holy Grail is certainly the definitive Arthurian legend for me and for my generation. And guess what? It's on Netflix, finally.
It is.
It's finally on the first of the year. They finally got the rights to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So I was watching it in class. Not in class. I'm sorry. I was watching it in my classroom after school one day. And my coworker from across the hall opened the door and walked in, and I'm doing every word of every line.
When they say they walked in, did they have some coconut shells that they were walking in with?
She puts her head into my door. She looks at me. She goes, well, then why are you watching it if you know every word? Because I didn't communicate with her in anything other than the words of the movie that were coming up at the time. That's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That's the Arthurian legend.
It's a flesh wound.
There is a movie called Polar that's coming out.
It's about a person with a certain set of skills, Steve.
Amy Poehler. No. This is, yes, the story of one of those retired assassins who goes out into the woods and tries to find a life after his dark life of killing people. And, his past comes to haunt him, and he's in mortal danger, and so is everybody else around him.
Exactly. There you go. And that's based off a graphic novel.
It is, and that one's on Netflix.
Don't you love it? That would be a comic for everyone else, but for some people it'd be called a graphic novel.
And you can tell that they're trying to make the pictures on the screen look something like that graphic novel. They've got the wipes and all the things that make it look like, wow, this is a comic book that's happening here
on Netflix.
On Netflix. I look forward to that one. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. We have talked many times about wonderful authors who can change the way that we think.
Some people say more with their words, Steve.
Yeah. And one of those authors is Neil Gaiman. We have discussed Neil Gaiman's work several times in the last 5 years on this show, and he's one of the greatest authors that's currently writing in the world. You got a chance to look at a series of short stories.
Well, I only read one of them.
This is the only one.
We get to the point where, at some point, where we don't have a time to read everything, Steve.
Right.
Short stories come in.
So, but as a part of an anthology, you read a story called Murder Mysteries by Neil Gaiman.
I did. And in fact, you read part of it, too.
I did.
And, in fact, I got to experience it in three levels.
Mm-hmm.
So, I read the short story, and then there was a... There's an audio play of the short story. And then there's a comic by P. Craig Russell where P. Craig Russell has worked with a lot of Neil Gaiman's stories. He did Coraline and a number of other ones. And so I got to experience it maybe in three different levels. And I could read the story again and probably glean another insight into the story. And so this is not particularly a long story, but... boy, what a fun story. Steve, it's a story of the first murder before Cain and Abel.
That's right. That's one thing that Neil Gaiman has written about many times is the idea of this mythology of the angels and the demons and this fight between them.
Well, this is the story of angels.
Mm-hmm.
And
a fallen angel.
Well, not yet. He hasn't fallen yet. Mm. So I guess we're in a Silver City. And our angel that we're following, in fact, that's a hard part. Who is actually narrating this? The narrator, we think, is Raguel.
Mm.
I think that's how we pronounce his name. He is a an angel of vengeance? How about that?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he's in his tower, doesn't move. And we don't know that's the story. In fact, let's back up real quick. We have a guy sits down on a park bench and basically bums a cigarette from a guy and says, listen, I'll just tell you a story for the payment of this cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get the story of these angels. And this is before humans. And this is the realm where the angels. The angels are, well, they look male. There's no sexual organs to them.
Right.
And they're kind of defining things as we kind of as they kind of unfold. So Lucifer is an angel, and we all know who Lucifer will eventually become.
Mm-hmm. That guy on that Fox show.
Yes, exactly. and then we've got other angels out there, and there's a murder that takes place. And we got a lot of the information of how this murder, Raguel, who has been waiting for an eternity, wakes up, and he knows what his job is. His job is to go and... He's the detective. This is a detective story.
Mm-hmm.
And try to put together what happened. And so he goes and interviews different people. You know, the first time you're being interviewed, maybe you know who these people are. Maybe you don't. Eventually, the light goes on who they really are. But what we determine is there was an angel who they were kind of defining what love would be.
The personification of the idea of love is featured here.
And somehow I'm thinking the other thing was jealousy or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So these two angels were working together. They became very, very close. One left to work on another project, and the other one became jealous. And it looks like that was our killer. And that's kind of just kind of unfolds. And I don't mean to kind of give it away, but I'm telling you right now, you could read it once. And read it a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, experience it through the radio drama, or if you get the audiobook, you have Neil Gaiman read it to mm-hmm. you. And what you're doing is you're kind of like a new insight. And that's why I said, who is the narrator of this? It's Raguel or is it Lucifer? I don't know.
Wow.
So towards the end, ultimately what we learn is this gentleman is in L.A. He's there for 10 days because there's a snowstorm in London. And he can't get his airplane. That's unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So we know something unusual is happening. He goes and hangs out with a lady he met. We find out he's, 21 and she's 31. They have an encounter. And then he can't remember what happened. And then we learn maybe Raguel made that happen. Maybe the storyteller was the angel. And ultimately... Lucifer learns that this was all premeditated by who would be God.
Mm-hmm.
And he's uncomfortable with that. He says, listen, you know, is this good? Are you a tool or are you not a tool? And this realization from him, from Lucifer, that this murder took place, that it was known that it would take place, and that God let this happen led to, ultimately, his leaving Silver City.
All of these metaphors, all of these metaphorical things, love and jealousy and the God's plan, and everybody knew that this was going to happen. So is it just for these things to happen? This is great writing.
And then there's another part. I told you about the gentleman, and I'm not going to give all that away, but what I will say is that you can read it once, and you've got like, oh, wow, that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Read it again. This is a short story that kind of plays around the more you read it. What do you think, Steve?
Beautiful. I think that Neil Gaiman absolutely set out to make a story that has all of those elements of the noir, the detective tale, but has all of those ideas from very, very long ago in mythology, the Christian mythology of the angels and God and all of that. And it's really... there's a depth to this that is different from a lot of other people's writing.
All right, so this shows up in Smoke and Mirrors, Short Fiction and Illusions by Neil Gaiman from 2009.
Mm-hmm.
In that same anthology is The Price, which we've been waiting for Christopher Salmon to finish up his adaptation of The Price. It's going to be animation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been working on that since, maybe 2011?
Wow.
I don't know if he's ever going to finish it, but... The storyboard he originally did, he probably should just stay with the storyboard. But Neil Gaiman has signed on with Christopher Salmon, as in, you can use my voice. It's a story of a cat basically ultimately fighting off the devil in this farmhouse, mm-hmm. and coming back every day to refight that battle. Very, very fun. And then I wanted to mention Dark Horse this week, just a few days ago, announced an adaption by Colin Doran for Neil Gaiman's Snow, Glass, and Apples, which is also in this anthology that is sort of a retelling of Snow White. So I'm telling you that Neil Gaiman is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are a young person who has interest in reading this, you probably need to be an older young person. There are some sexual situations. While angels don't have sexual parts, there are some sexual situations in it. And while they certainly aren't overly talked about, there's, you know, they certainly are graphic enough to mention that. So this is probably not for a young person. But I would say that, man, if you are a late teen, a person who has interest in fantasy, or if you are Pamela Bedore at University of Connecticut and you had to write and you needed to send something that was fairly short to kind of introduce fantasy to people, I think this is where you go.
There's so many other pieces that Neil Gaiman has put out talking about this fight between good and evil, the demons and the angels. I mentioned the Fox show, Lucifer, that is loosely, very, very loosely based on the graphic novel that was produced. And they are going to Netflix for season four. Netflix,
are they really?
Yeah, they picked up season four. Fox canceled it after season three, and they're going to season four with that story. That's a really good detective-type story.
Where many people became aware of Neil Gaiman was through Sandman, which was a comic book that was, in fact, they ended up putting together an imprint because it changed comics. The comics were not necessarily aimed at young people. They became aimed at young adults. And Sandman was truly literary work. Gaiman's work, as I first became aware of him, was when he took over on Miracle Man from Alan Moore. And we're still waiting, I mean, like 25 years later or so, for him to finish up this story of, you know, basically Captain Marvel, Shazam-type god who is now transforming the world.
Where I became aware of Neil Gaiman was when he wrote a book with Terry Pratchett.
Good Omens.
Good Omens. And that's coming to Netflix at some point in 2019.
Well, late in the year. And in fact, in January, The Guardian named that their read of the of the month for their readers. And so we're going to read Good Omens, by the way, this year. So it's going to be read. And
you'll enjoy it.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Maybe you'll get into more Terry Pratchett after that, because Terry Pratchett was such a wonderful author. Neil Gaiman is definitely one of the top authors. Terry Pratchett's writing is different from Neil Gaiman's, but the two of them together wrote a very good story.
And that is the story of an angel and a demon, right?
Yes, it is.
And
how they work together and how they work against each other and all the situations where they are the metaphor for all of the things that are happening in our daily lives. It's good reading. We will get to that one. So we recommend that you find this short story called Murder Mysteries by Neil Gaiman. We've got all of the links that you need in our show notes, or you can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll with It. We talk all the time about different ways that you can see all of this stuff that we're talking about. And, you know, cord cutting has been a big buzzword for a decade now. I've never had cable. I had cable, you know, for a moment when I was in college because the dorm just supplied us with cable, so we had access to that. But other than that, I'm a over-the-antenna kind of guy, but I do have Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime for all of those movies.
And CBS All Access.
And CBS All Access and BritBox. The list does, it adds up really quick.
It does. And I have YouTube TV. Which is I've signed up for, which is basically a streaming service that it takes place before your cable. It's got all the channels, your local channels, and all that other stuff available to you also. But one of the real challenges with streaming services is sharing passwords. And if you are a company like Amazon Prime, If you're HBO, the CEO has gone on
record
basically saying, just find somebody who has a password.
Because we want you to see this content. We don't worry about pirating this content. We want you to get this entertainment so that maybe when the time comes that you have the opportunity to buy it, you will buy access to HBO.
And I have AT&T for my cell phone service, which includes HBO as part of it.
Right.
And so I can just basically log in there. But for most services, they're concerned about the ultimate sharing of passwords.
Because theoretically, it's costing them a lot of money.
Well, it's stealing, Steve.
It theoretically is stealing.
It's not theoretically. It's not a theory. It is stealing.
The idea...
Now, there are artists, you know, at the beginning of a DVD or mm-hmm. the beginning of a movie where, in fact, before Mary Poppins, Emily Blunt and Miranda basically had a little moment where they came out and they said, think of all the people who worked on this movie. We want to say thank you. They're trying to say that there are actual people who get paid behind it.
Right.
And ultimately what they're saying is, listen, if you are stealing this,
you are
then
hurting the industry at least and hurting these individuals for sure.
Sure. Well, anyway, there's services out there. They're trying to kind of identify, and they're using behavioral analytics to determine who's sharing. And obviously, the ultimate would be to shut down your account.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe it's just a matter of learning it. Maybe if there's a sharing and it's, let's say, that's reasonable for a percentage of this. But maybe it's not for others. I mean, they have to make, the entertainment providers need to make that determination.
Mm-hmm. So Netflix maybe is going to go on record as saying, we don't want you to be sharing these passwords. And they're going to put into place some methods of stopping that sharing.
Well, this firm is called Cinemedia. And their service is called Credential Sharing Insight.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an article that we found this week that basically talks a little bit about trying to look that up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can see the same thing with music services like, Apple Music or Spotify or something of that nature. You know, the idea is to, if you're using it, that you're paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
This will be probably something over the next year or so we're going to see a lot more of.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasoning is because when Disney comes out with their streaming service,
right,
it's going to put a lot of pressure on a lot of the other streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, streaming services like Hulu and Netflix could be hurt deeply by this.
That competition is going to be fierce because Disney has this huge catalog that everybody really enjoys. And if they are pulling all of that stuff from all the other services, which they are, we are going to flock to Disney, that's for sure.
Well, a lot of people will. But, mm-hmm. you know, the idea is when times are good, money flows.
Yeah.
And when times get tight, then you start looking at tightening up areas where you just allow them to go. And sharing account was probably one of those areas. So this type of software is going to help that mm-hmm. or help identify that, and then it'll be up to the services to determine how they want to deal with that.
Right. It'll be interesting. It's always interesting. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. Is it still January next week? Wow. January's a long month, isn't it?
January's a long month. And you know what? February, for being as short as it is also a long month.
It's the winter. Ugh, the winter.
That's right.
If you need more information, you can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. You send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and Spotify, kids. I told my kids about the show, and they've said, oh, is it on Spotify? I said, yes, kids. Yes, it is. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.